Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Eso wa mago nati anyo dasanasa visuddhiya. The Eightfold Path. Coming into the heart of this 2005 meditation retreat, hopefully that many of you are starting to calm down, the mind becoming more and more still. If it's not becoming more and more still, ask yourself why. Use insight to understand why. It's always because one is interfering. Sometimes we interfere because it's not working. And because it's not working, then we interfere. We get into this cycle which stops us developing the beautiful meditations. So sometimes it takes courage and guts to be able to leave things alone, to let the nature calm the mind down rather than you doing it. Please remember the insight of non-self, that this mind, this body, this monastery, this world, this universe is nothing to do with you. Not me, not mine, not the self. Not me, not mine, not the self. So sometimes you ask yourself, what are you doing? It's none of your business. Butt out, let go, be still. If you can do these sorts of practices, just leave things alone. You understand, just the mind will develop stillness by itself. You've got to have patient endurance, first of all. Sometimes when we have these unpleasant experiences in the mind, which must happen from time to time, remember, unpleasant experiences are only the space between two pleasant ones. So it's par for the course. Happiness and suffering, sukha and dukkha, just like two dance partners twirling around on the floor. That's all they are. They just twirl around each other like night follows day, day follows night. That's all they are. Same with the happiness and suffering. So we have to just stand back, to be objective, to be detached, to let these things be. I've been telling a few people in their interviews to remember the law of karma. Because the law of karma is not just something external with making merit, giving alms food, doing jobs, giving donations. There's also an important part of karma called manokarma, the work of the mind, the karma of the mind. And I love to, or rather I like to look at my mind and see this state which I'm experiencing now is the result of the karma of the past. So when I look at the state which I'm working with, I realize that it's here, I can't do anything about it. And so I never try to make bad karma on top of the karma already here. If it's a state which I don't like, it's here already. You can't get rid of it. You have to accept it. You have to be at peace with it. What else can you do? It's already arrived. So my focus is always to make sure with this mind state now, I know it's come from the past, causally arisen. Whether it's happy or sad, whether it's bright or whether it's dull, whether it's wandering or whether it's still, it's a result of the past, karma. And my job is to make sure I don't do any more bad karma. That I don't go and struggle with this mind of mine. I don't fight it. I don't have ill will or desire. All these hindrances which stop the samadhi, the meditation, progressing. So my focus is on wholesome karma in this moment. That's why that I've been saying for the last year or two, make peace with every moment. Be kind to every moment. Be gentle to every moment. Be like a compassionate Buddha to every moment. Whatever mind state you're experiencing, if you're wandering mind, even fantasies and dullness, whatever, please, that is the result of past karma. Don't make more bad karma with the state of mind you're in. So this is actually where we learn what making good mental karma is. and the way of making good mental karma. You can experience that as like loving kindness, compassion, gentleness, but it's all the same word, just letting go, leaving it alone, butting out, stopping doing things. Unfortunately, when we start the practice, sometimes we have this, what I was saying this morning, a vicious cycle. Just say, like like when it reinforces, say, what is it when there is the feedback loop? Thank you, that's what I'm looking for. You have this feedback loop where because we're negative or because we don't feel well, and then we sort of usually respond to that with negativity, with more bad karma. We want to get rid of it. We want to just go and spin out somewhere. And because of that, we make more bad karma, which means we get more bad mind states. So what you have to do if the meditation isn't working, if you find that, you know, you're dull or you're bored, or whatever other negative state you're experiencing, please be at peace with that. Have the strength of endurance not to fight it, to be kind to it, to be gentle to it, because at least you're knowing you're making the positive causes, the good mental karma, for positive mind states in the future. And the whole purpose of this meditation retreat is making such positive good karma that not only do you get this beautiful happiness building up, but you also build it up with this gentleness, with this softness, with this letting go, which means that you're happy, but you're peacefully happy. You get this sense of being interested in your meditation. Seem to be because the energies, as I was saying last week, start to arise. And those energies are the happiness. But this evening I wanted to encourage making more sort of good karma and actually using the result of that good karma to create more happiness in the mind. It is, as you know, one of my practices to do Chaganusati, because I work hard for the Sangha or for the Buddhist society, although sacrificing myself to do all these little tasks, I still reflect upon what I'm doing, the good karma which I've done. I literally stop and think, what have I done today? What service have I performed? How have I helped progress, you know, the Dharma in the world? And when I start thinking of the little things which I've done, just need to reflect upon it, to keep thinking about that, to dwell upon it. It brings up happiness. It brings up energy. It brings up the joy. And I deliberately do that until the happiness is quite strong. And when the happiness is strong, then I let go. Because that energy which has come up in the mind through reflecting on something like Chaganusati means that when I go off onto my breath, it's so easy to hold. The energy of the mind has strengthened mindfulness, the mind is delighting, it's got rid of its negativity, it's got out of that feedback loop of negativity, and now it's willing to go. It just wants to watch the breath. And of course, once you get into this positive feedback loop, the mindfulness wants to watch the breath, it does watch the breath, you become so delighted with the breath, you don't want to do anything else because you don't want to do anything else. More energy goes into the knower, the mindfulness gets stronger, the joy gets greater. You just bliss out. And that's called jhanas. So the point is, we have to get the happiness going in our meditation. And doing something like Chaganusati, looking at your generosity, your giving, your service, what you've done, that really helps. And that doesn't help. Well, if you've been mean, I haven't done very much this week. Then just think of all the qualities of something like the Buddha or the Dhamma or the Arya Sangha. Many of you have got photos of great monks in your huts. You've got statues of the Buddha. Just look at those. Reflect upon them. Allow the mind to linger on the qualities which are embedded in the smile of a Buddha. Just look at those great monks, you know, what they've done. And they were just like you when they were young. They did it, you can too. It gives you inspiration. And that inspiration develops the joy, the happiness, and the joy and the happiness propel you, strengthening the mindfulness, allowing the mindfulness to stay on the breath, building up the beautiful breath and going all the way to nimittas and jhanas because of the development of happiness. That's why that we should be diligent, not just in being mindful, diligent not just in sitting on the cushion or walking on the meditation path. We should be diligent in developing this wholesome happiness in our monastic life. When you eat your food, you know, reflect on where that food has come from. Not as a form of feeling guilty, but as a way of inspiration. All these people who have been coming every day for years. Just some of the people who came today. I remember one of those ladies, actually two or three of them, have been feeding this monastery for 22 years. Or 21 years and 1 year when we were in Magnolia Street. Every week they've been coming for such a long time. When I think like that, that inspires me. I just get so much joy and happiness that such people have been just so consistent, so committed to this monastery. And it gives me inspiration and joy. I think that that food which has been brought with this beautiful sense of faith and love for the Sangha. So when I eat it, it's not just, you know, the vitamins and the minerals which are and the protein which are in the food. It's the purity of their intentions which I also eat, and that gives me so much happiness and energy. So when you reflect upon the food, allow it not just to taste nice, allow it to just go right into the mind to inspire you. So it's food for the heart, not just food for the body. So you think, wow, this is like holy food. And I'm eating it. They got faith in me. And this is where this all came from. This is one of the most beautiful ways that food can be offered and eaten. And you're part of this. And that just inspires everything. And it brings you so much energy and happiness. You start to look at when you've been sweeping the paths, or whether you've been doing the weeding, or whether you've been building something. Just we started a monastery in this place, and this monastery is becoming world famous. People actually know about this place, and they look to this place with inspiration. It gives them happiness, it gives them joy, it gives them the opportunity to make even more good karma. And you've been part of this. So you think of that. You dwell upon it, you get off on it, until it brings you this joy and happiness. You go for walks in the morning, you look upon this beautiful piece of nature until it brings you joy. You look happily at the little joeys in the pouches. You see the birds flitting through the trees. You just see the trees themselves swaying. You see the clouds flowing over the sky. Until you get joy and happiness. So you deliberately develop this happiness and joy. You make it an important part of the practice. And you'll find that once you have that happiness and joy in your mind, you can sit down and it's easy to meditate. One of the skillful means which I've been teaching others and which I sometimes practice myself, as well as just thinking of all the good things which I've done, sometimes I sit down and just recall one of the amazing things which I've done, the time when I've had a very peaceful experience in meditation. I just remember that. I bring it up into my mind and allow my mindfulness to dwell on that previous experience, the most peaceful, calm experience of my life so far. And as I remember it, as I recall it, I start to build up the picture, where it was, what was around me. As I use my power of visualization, focusing my attention on that event, was so peaceful, so still. With the picture, with the memory, comes a feeling. With the feeling, there, that's peace, that's stillness, that's joy. And then once that peace, that stillness, that joy is established in my mind along with the picture, I just allow the visualized picture to fade away. But I keep the peace. I keep the inspiration, I keep the happiness. And then I just start watching the breath. What you do in this little method, this technique, is you get a jump start on samadhi practice. Straight away when you watch the breath, because you've remembered your past experience of peace and joy, the mind is in that direction, it's inclining towards peace and stillness. And of course, when it inclines there, it will reach there. When it reaches there, you've got this beautiful peace, this stillness, this happiness, this inspiration right at the very beginning. And then you put it on your breath and off you go. So it's important to develop that delight and the happiness in this meditation. Otherwise you will find that you're wasting a lot of time struggling with your willpower rather than just allowing wisdom power to be able to watch your breath. And after a while, and I hope it's starting to happen in this retreat, after a while just the mind just wants to meditate. It inclines towards the breath. Why? Because it's happy, because you're enjoying it. But you create that happiness and that joy. Until you just love sitting for hour after hour after hour. Even in my early years as a monk, I enjoyed meditating. I enjoyed walking on the path and sitting meditation. There was happiness there. Perhaps because I was trained from early on to look out for that happiness, to develop it, to cultivate it, to value it, and to guard it when it arose. It's another point: when happiness and joy do arise in your mind, don't let it go so easily. Guard it, cultivate it, nurture it. This is actually part of right effort. Any wholesome state which arises in the mind, said the Buddha, you should guard it, make much of it, develop it. And then you should try and arouse those wholesome states. And this is how we do it. So by developing that wholesome state of happiness and joy, in our meditation, we find the meditation starts to take off. There's another part of developing happiness and joy in the meditation, and that's actually being discriminating enough, to being wise enough, to being sensitive enough, to know what happiness and joy really is. Because there are many types of happiness and joy, and the happiness and joy of samadhi is very subtle and refined. And sometimes people with coarse minds, they only know the exciting joys, like fantasies, or like laughter, or like delicious food, or whatever. Sure, that's happiness, but there's also the sober happinesses of sobriety. These are the happinesses when one is just so peaceful and so still. There's a joy there, there's a peace there. There's even a bliss there. And after a while of hanging out in a monastery such as this, you become so sensitive that you can start to pick up this happiness and joy. The happiness and joy of peace. The bliss of stillness. Just the wonder of silence. Which is why when sometimes people come into this hall, there's nothing happening here. It's not a particularly well-decorated hall, it's so simple. They can come in and it's peaceful, it's empty, it's still. And they can pick up some of the happiness energy of that stillness. That's why people like coming in here, why they like to sit down, why they like just to be still and meditate. Because you're recognizing the happiness and joy of stillness, of silence, of letting go. We need to recognize that more and more until we become what I've called in my little book connoisseurs of happiness. Not the gross happinesses of the sensory pleasures, but the beautiful, subtle happinesses of the mind. And once you can start to notice those subtle happinesses, then you find it's easier to meditate. Because the mind straight away recognizes that when you just close your eyes, sit down and watch the breath, that is one of the most beautiful feelings in the world. Just to be free of having to think, of having to do things, of having to wander back and forth. The freedom from activity, both physical and mental activity, is such a bliss. You recognize that. You appreciate that, So when you first sit down, you delight in the peace and the freedom. You delight in it so much that the thoughts don't have a chance to establish themselves. You're just too happy to think. You're just too content to move. So when you start watching your breath, you're already incredibly still. When you're a connoisseur of the happiness of stillness, you'll find meditation is so easy, attractive and effective. So be a connoisseur of the happiness of stillness. Investigate that, look out for it, recognize it throughout your day. There's not much going on in this monastery at this time. So often, you can just be by yourself, you can sit down anywhere in this monastery and look out for that stillness and recognize its pleasure. Practice that way as much as you possibly can until you do become that connoisseur. You can recognize the happiness of stillness so easily. You see, it's all around here. This is a still, beautiful monastery. Get off on that stillness. Do not take it for granted. Recognize it. Bring it to mind. Until the time comes, you see it all around you. You see it when you're sitting. And so you don't have to do anything. You've got happiness. It's your constant companion. It's like you have this beautiful treasure in this monastery. And people just don't recognize it's there. Because they don't know what treasure truly is. You've got the opportunity for stillness. You've got the opportunity for freedom. To enjoy the peace and the happiness of that peace. So please recognize it and go for it. And as the more you do that during your day, when you're sitting on the toilet or when you're cleaning up the kitchen, the more you actually recognize the happiness of peace, the more likely it is that when you go back to your room and cross your legs and start meditating, you'll recognize the happiness of peace in your heart, in your mind. You just sit there and close your eyes. Peace. And how joyful this is. How wonderful it is just to sit here and do nothing. And that is not a false happiness. That is a happiness which is pointing in the path of Nibbana. It is a happiness born of letting go. It is a joy of liberation. And when you have the happiness of letting go, you find you let go more and more and more. So I was saying to someone this morning that Ajahn Chah's saying that we meditate not to gain things, but to abandon things, to let go of things, to throw things away. That's why I call meditation like going to the tip. When you sit down and you close your eyes, you go to the tip. This is the place where we throw all our rubbish. So you go in there and see how much rubbish you can throw out. But don't be like some of these people who go to the tip with one trailer and come back with two trailer loads of old rubbish. Just empty everything out. And as you empty everything out, the more you give up, just the more happiness you feel. This is one of the great sayings of the Buddha. If you want to experience sukha, then give up the five senses. And if you want to experience complete happiness, then give up the five senses completely. That's in the Jatakas. This is actually what we do. We just throw away as much as we can. So when we're sitting with watching the breath, we develop this beautiful happiness, a happiness of peace, a happiness of stillness. And it's that happiness which is the vehicle, is the fuel, the important ingredient which takes you off into the deep samadhi. Willpower never gets you far. Just wanting, aspiration doesn't really get you far. What really gets you on the way is just sheer joy, happiness, the happiness of peace, the joy of letting go, recognizing the taste of freedom. So we just sit here and watch the breath and just get off on just being at peace, not having to do anything, not going anywhere. The goal is not what we watch. Instead we watch the happiness. Because it's the happiness gives us contentment, and the contentment gives us peace, and the peace makes for stillness, and the stillness just grows into the jhana. All because we did nothing. So we develop the happiness as our vehicle. The happiness throughout the day, but especially the happiness in our meditation. When we walk meditation, we don't just walk thinking about things or planning what we're going to do when we leave this retreat or don't know what else you think about. But just when you're walking, just be so happy that you can now walk meditation. Now you're not sick in hospital, so you can't walk. You've got a fit body and you're just walking backwards and forwards with no care in the world. Absolutely free. For those of you who've just come here from your jobs and from your family, soon you'll have to go back to all of that. Now you are free. So enjoy every moment of this walking. Just all you need to do in life is just walk one step. So free, so simple, so lovely. So when I walk meditation, just one step, that's all I need to do. I've got so many jobs which I should be doing, so many letters to write, so many things to organize, so many problems to solve. These are other people's problems. But as an abbot, as a teacher, when I walk meditation, just one foot moving, that's all I have to do. That's the only task in front of me. Oh, what a relief. At last, a moment of simplicity, a moment of freedom. So I get off on that simplicity. I create happiness just with one step. And because I'm walking happily with every step, it's just so easy just to watch the walking meditation. You're just happy, that's all. People ask, what are you doing? Nothing. Just walking. Happily walking. And that joy really builds up. You walk in meditation, you develop the piti sukha, the happiness with every step. It's a happiness which recognizes simplicity. Then the happiness builds up, and because of the happiness you get the samadhi, the focusing of the mind, the stillness, and the power of attention, the power of mindfulness, that all comes. So happiness is important, happiness is the key. But that happiness is the happiness of silence, the happiness of peace, the happiness of stillness. It's not the happiness of excitement. You have the happiness of excitement, someone tells a joke. Yeah, it's happy for about a few seconds, and then afterwards what? Sometimes you're like there's a big void afterwards and someone else has to tell a joke, or you wonder what to do next. So there's some happinesses which are so unstable in the world. And there are some happinesses which are just there and last for long periods of time. This happiness of stillness, the happiness born of letting go, the happiness of peace. So we develop that happiness. And especially with your meditation practice, in particular with the sitting. Once the happiness starts to arise, combine it with your breath. So you get this beautiful breath. Or put loving kindness on your breath. Breath, the door of my heart is open to you, no matter who you are, no matter what you do. Until you literally love the breath, until you have joy with the breath, just like a mother loves her only child, she dotes on that child. See if you can watch the breath with loving kindness to the point that you dote on that breath. Oh, this little breath is so nice, so gorgeous, so beautiful. You've got happiness with the breath. And once that starts to occur, then you're on the way. Not only do you like meditating, you meditate a lot, you don't get involved in other activities, you don't seek for things to do, you're just so happy and content. People can do all sorts of things to you on the arms around, you just don't care, you're just so happy, that's your problem, not mine. And you're just so peaceful. And you spend so much time meditating because you're getting off on it, the meditation just grows and deepens, the happiness gets more and more. And when the happiness gets to a certain stage, that happiness, the power of your mind, and so the depth of your stillness, it manifests as a nimitta. Those nimittas are high happiness states. They're blissful, but the peaceful bliss. If you're dull and grumpy, always fault-finding, you never get nimittas. You're just wasting all your happiness just on petty things, on who did what to whom, when and how. So don't worry about what other people are doing. Don't worry about the faults in the world, or the faults in the lay people, or the faults in your fellow monks, or the faults wherever. You're just wasting your energy. Instead of that, just develop this beautiful happiness inside. So happy, so powerful, so pure, that soon the happiness gets so strong, the mind becomes so empowered, that the power of the mind just overcomes the power of the five external senses. Just your mind has too much energy, too much power. So it manifests as a nimitta. This beautiful light appears in the mind because of the power of your happiness. And it just swamps any sounds, any feelings in the body. It's just too strong for them. You know, you can't feel the body. It's just you're blinded by the power of the mind. So you can't see or feel anything else. And that's just like the increase in happiness. The real happiness of the mind. Gives it power, and its power just gets so strong you can't see anything else. So you see these beautiful nimittas in your mind. So delicious, so powerful. And this is where monks have silly smiles on their face. They're having a great time, because their happiness is starting to really build up. But please, 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 just enjoy the happiness and don't think, now I've got to get the jhanas. Don't spoil it with controlling these things. Remember, fault-finding, thinking that nimittas aren't enough, which is fault-finding, means that they can't take them further. You're destroying happiness. You're becoming a grumpy monk. Ah, nimittas, well, who are they? I just want the real thing, the jhanas. Don't be demanding in nature, as it says in the Metta Sutta. Be contented and easily satisfied. Again, from the Metta Sutta. So you're just content, satisfied. This is good enough for me. This is so much bliss. Wow, this will do. With that type of attitude, just the happiness grows and grows and grows even more. This is what it's like. You're just watching a nimitta and it just gets all blissful and blissful and blissful and blissful. Until you're just so blissful, you just explode into a jhana. That's what happens, bliss upon bliss. You find that this happiness is the path. It's an important path. We developed it from the beginning, and now it's grown to the most incredible experience of your life. It comes out afterwards. After the jhanas, you emerge. And wow, that was so nice. It gives me so much pleasure to actually to see other people come out of jhanas. To see them just so bubbly and so light. You know what it's like, you see someone else happy, like someone else has won some sort of lotto, or they've got married, or they've fallen in love. There's something sweet and nice about seeing someone else happy. So you can imagine what it's like for me when I see someone who's just emerged from a jhana. Oh, it just gives me so much joy. Because that's a pure attainment they've just had. One of the very best. And so when I see that, it gives me happiness. And as for them, they've got huge happiness. And then they start using insight. Standing on that experience, why was that happy? What was going on? And they understand, just like it said in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, which we just chanted, sukha is the end of dukkha. The more suffering of samsara you abandon, the more you experience happiness. The extent of the bliss you felt in jhana was directly related to the amount of suffering which has just been abandoned, albeit temporarily. And you look upon that bliss as the end of a lot of suffering. And you're getting deep insights. It may sound simple, but that's a powerful insight into the Four Noble Truths. You just understand the five sense world is a whole heap of suffering. The jokes, the sunsets, sort of the beautiful soft little kitten in your room, just fantasies, sex, compared to when all of that disappears. That's a lot of suffering. So you never look for satisfaction in the world of the five senses. Experiences like that mean you'll incline again and again and again to that incredible pure bliss, the freedom from the five sense world. The bliss not only just takes you into jhana, but the bliss teaches you what the Four Noble Truths are all about. The third noble truth says the end of craving is nibbana, is the end of suffering, and the end of suffering is ultimate happiness. Nibbanaṃ paramaṃ sukhaṃ, it says in the Dhammapada several times. Nibbana is the ultimate happiness. So you should expect the closer you get to nibbana, the more happiness you get. And that's precisely the way it goes. When you get to jhana, you get immense happinesses. And those happinesses develop and get more profound as you go through the jhanas. But the happiness is the way. From the beginning, when you just start to meditate, you get the happiness of just being here and getting off on the food which you're given, getting off on just being able to be free during this time, understanding the beautiful, delicate happiness, the subtle happiness of freedom, of peace, of having nothing to do. And that way you'll never get bored. How can you get bored? Just doing nothing is just so amazingly wonderful. How on earth do you want to do something? Go and look for something to do. It's crazy. Instead, you just love just sitting here, wanting to be more still, not to be active. So the happiness starts to push you in that direction of more and more stillness. Until you become so absolutely still. The bliss is incredible, and that's the jhanas. And the insight comes afterwards, that's the way out of samsara. The way of bliss, the way of happiness. And that's why we have a simple, soft monastery. Why don't go around punishing anybody whenever they do anything wrong. Why don't shout at anybody. We use happiness as the carrot, as the incentive. And happiness becomes the goal. The end of suffering is happiness, nibbana. So during this next week or so, until the next talk, cultivate happiness, not the happiness of the senses, not the happiness of excitement, not the happiness of the ego attaining something, but just the happiness born of letting go of everything. The happiness when you've had all these burdens and you just put them down. The happiness when you're not crowded into a house or to an office with so many things to do. You're free. You can just wander wherever you want. Nothing is binding you. You're no attachments, no baggage. There's beautiful freedom and the happiness of that freedom. Develop that. Notice that. Know what we're talking about by the happiness of peace, the happiness of letting go. And develop that and develop that and develop that throughout the meditation. You find that way your meditation becomes so powerful, so effective, so deep. And also, in no long time, you become fully enlightened. It has to happen. It's a path of joy. The path of bliss. All born from the freedom from letting go. So if you haven't got those stages of happiness yet, start developing them. If they haven't happened naturally, point the mind in that direction. Start to reflect upon your generosity, your goodness, your purity. Reflect on the qualities of the Buddha or the Dhamma or the great monks and nuns. Read the Theragata or the Therigata, the poems of those monks. Inspire yourself. Get this happiness coming up and then just put it straight on your meditation. And your meditation just takes off. And then you're experiencing the bliss states. And then you make me a very happy abbot. And when I think about you, I can get into the jhanas even easier. This is what you do. So that's the talk this evening.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghaṁ.